Thank you. Michelle Rush.
Hi there. My name is Michelle Rush and I live at 5620 South Kittery Loop. And the first thing I would like to ask you is, could I get permission to email this to you after this? Because I learned enough from other people that I can change this quite a bit.
Email.
Okay. And so I'm very happy to hear that your equity approach, I think that will help us. So I like that. So anyway, my issues on the water, for one, are more the usage of the huge number of people coming in that's going to affect our availability of usage in our Kidder Creek estates. And so that's my biggest concern. Whatever number you come up with, that's that many people taking water before we get it. We pay taxes. Our quiet enjoyment of life as retirees, I'm too stupid to retire, but the rest of my neighbors, that's where we settled to finish. We paid our dues. And so we're very concerned with that being taken away from us. So the water from all those people coming in, showers, drinking, toilet, everything, and because, I mean, we just had a great rain, but that's not going to solve the issue. So that's the water problem. And the road problem, I think, is very big, because that road is just not made for that kind of traffic. The first part of the road seems well. The second part of the road is bad. So now you add a wildfire like McKinney that we had last year. Those people couldn't get out. And people died because of that. So as people are storming out and fire trucks and water tenders are trying to get in, and we're trying to get out of our little area, what happens? This is something really possible. And so it's a responsibility level to make sure that we all don't shoot ourselves in the foot with too many people. So I am a proponent of this new thing I just read, of the number one no project site to be further developed, because we have loved Kidder Creek Camp since I've been here 16 years, and it's been a great thing as it is. Now the last couple years, when they're slowly creeping forward, because they have gone past what their original number was supposed to be, there's much more traffic on the road, deer are being hit, blah, 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 all that stuff. And so extrapolate that out, and our neighborhood's gone to hell. So that's a big concern. And I feel like 3 minutes getting up. Okay.
You're spot on, Michelle.
Thank you, and I will resubmit this with the rest of the story. Thank you.
D. Jones.
My name is Dee Jones. I live at 711 South Kidder Creek, approximately a mile east of the camp. I've lived in the Scott Valley for 18 years. I moved to the edge of Kidder Creek when there were still salmon coming up, because there was enough water in the creek for salmon to get there on their last spawning runs. I haven't seen a salmon in the creek for several years now. Creek flow is way down. Camp traffic is way up. Fire, the threat of catastrophic fire especially, is upon us. We've watched what it's done in communities around our county. No matter how much planning, no matter how much a good plan, no matter how much attention is paid to it ahead of the fact, when the eventuality happens, it's not if, it's when. It's going to be a major threat to life and property in our neighborhood. I'm very concerned that the CAL FIRE plan kind of glossed over the residents. There are quite a number of us on the South Kidder Loop, on Patterson Creek, on North Kidder Creek Road, who are either contiguous to the camp or close enough that we will be affected. I can't actually get out my driveways on camp drop-off days. I have two driveways. I have an industrial driveway, which accommodates large commercial vehicles, cement trucks, big rigs, that kind of thing. I have to use it. I can't use my residential driveway because traffic is coming at a rate that just makes it unsafe for me to pull out. The road is narrow. Some places it's not even 18 feet wide. It's curvy above me. I just see catastrophe looming. And I support the camp and its mission. The people are my neighbors. I love them. I admire them. I think what they're doing is a wonderful thing for kids that come to the camp. But I think it comes with a cost. And if the cost is my quiet enjoyment of my sanctuary, which is my 64 acres, that Kidder Creek Road bisects, I own the road, by the way, it is not a deed easement. I can't put barriers up on it, unfortunately. But I really think that this needs to be looked at very carefully. It is precedent setting. You are the, not the last stop, it's the Board of Supervisors that is. I urge you to consider this more carefully before you approve it.
Thank you, Dee. Melinda Perlman.
Hello, I'm Melinda Perlman. I live at about three blocks from the camp for the last 3+ years. I want to start out by saying that this expansion has been referred to as a children's summer camp everywhere. Yet our lawyer's definition is that it is a massive commercial year-round conference center, in my words, to be built in a high fire danger area. These issues have not been adequately dealt with or mitigated. Traffic, over 1,000 cars allowed per day now. Noise, no mitigation, air quality, water issues, extreme drought, fish. Will the neighbors, will our wells go dry? Who knows? Extreme fire danger, incomplete evacuation exits. 20-year build out. That is so vague, not specific. I ask you, can they just, once this is passed as is, go ahead and finish everything? Do they have to adhere to 20 years, and where's the plan? And also, the 622 occupancy reduces only 25% of the impacts. Would you be happy in your neighborhood if you had to deal with 75% of the impacts? Because of these discrepancies, I recommend alternative number one, no project alternative. The project alternative is environmentally superior to the project because it substantially lessens the project's significant and unavoidable impacts, and the camp can still have their ministry. If this project passes as is, there should be a cap on an occupancy of no more than 400 people. Again, my question is, who will be responsible for the passing of this flawed project? To protect your own people, my camp friends, and the many people in the valley and your community, please take this opportunity to go back to the drawing board and create a safe, viable, and legal EIR. Our lawyer, Marsha Birch, states we've all gotten her letters all along that this will not pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that was the last card that I had in front of me. Is there anyone else wishing to speak in opposition here in the audience? Okay, I'll come fill out a card, please. And while you're doing that, Rachel, do we Yes, we have a hand up here.
We do, and I also, excuse me, I also have a letter that was sent to us that was requested be read into the record.
Okay, so while this gentleman's filling out the card, let's give 3 minutes to the 598-2131.
My name is Ann Marsh, 4628 Pine Cone Drive, Etna, California. I submitted a letter which was not acknowledged by my name, so I will bring forth the points that I made in that letter. One, the population and existing residents around the camp are virtually being ignored in all these wonderful reports and modeling for fire evacuation. How does the camp intend to evacuate their people and still accommodate us people who live here? That's a huge question that needs to be answered and has not yet been answered. Two, the camp has a water system, number CA4700814, with the California State Water Board. Why was this not disclosed and analyzed during all the mitigation, during the EIR or even prior? If we knew what that water system was, we'd know a lot more about how water is going to work on this proposed expansion. Number three, the Scott Valley Area Plan has been and is being ignored in the equation of this approval. Even though the camp may have been there prior to the approval of the Scott Valley Area Plan, expansion of that camp is not excluded from being considered by the Scott Valley Area Plan, which clearly states that this is not a place where that kind of expansion, density, or population can be. I think that concludes my comments. I felt the staff report was very light on substance, and I particularly will refer to the fact that the talking about the commercial aspects of it, even your attorney wasn't clear on what he was saying. Thank you very much for listening to my comments.
Thank you. Okay, Roberto Diaz, close enough?
Roberto Rangula Diaz, same thing. Thank you very much. That's my name. I live at 765 J.G. Kira Creek Loop, Etna. And anyway, so yes, I do oppose it. I really like what Andy is trying to do with kids. I volunteer. I hear about some of the people volunteer for kids. I did it in Washington State for the juvenile court. And anyway, so we do different kind of things. And like Michelle, like people before me, says we work, we did it, we got there. Michelle can help herself, she doesn't retire, whatever. I had to get kicked by my own attorney to retire. I was forced to retire, but I didn't want to because or value. You know, this is our country, this is my country, I was born somewhere else. But this is my country, I've been here, I pay taxes, I raised my kids here. I have a letter from the president, I have a letter from the president of the University of Washington, whatever. We did it, we deserve what we came here to be for. Now we are living in, is tomorrow we are gonna have a water. Is my water contaminated by Roundup or pesticides? Now, for animals, I love animals. I mean, I was on the burden to get killed many times because I protect people. Now I say, how about nature? How about the animals? How about the livestock that nurses us? That's on the thing too. It's not only ourselves. The quality of our lives is going to go down. That's not a question about, can you, Andy, relocate that place to a safe place, not only for us to keep our quality of life that we deserve, we earn it, but to protect the kid, the very kids that you are helping and trying to help, which I love it, it's a good thing. I've done it, we've done it. Put it on an area
make
where
sure
there's...
Make sure you address the commission.
Right, oh, I'm sorry, I'm just talking to Andy, but yes, you're I apologize for that, Your Honor. So I will ask you if you will ask him and the committee, Chairman, and to see if it is possible to have him to ask him if he can relocate to an area that is open away from too many trees, which is the forest. A thing like that, in the way the weather is going, is catastrophic. And relocated will be kind because this is irresponsible right now. And keep it to the 400 or 360, somewhere in there. And because there's no been talks about stopping it. It just keeps going up. That's
thank you.
About, thank you very much. And apologize for.
Okay. And I'm not an honor. I'm merely a rancher serving as a commissioner.
Well, that's
I have no desire to get on that
path. That's an honor to me.
Okay, do we have any other hands?
I am seeing no other hand raised on our call requesting to speak at this time. I just have the one letter that was asked to be read into the record.
I'll give you 3 minutes.
All right, I will start the timer. Good afternoon. We are homeowners with two parcels of land along South Kidder Creek Road. We are very concerned about the expansion of the facilities that are proposed for the Kidder Creek Orchard Camp. First and foremost, the Scott Valley Plan was written and approved by the people of this valley to stop this kind of large development. Secondly, the traffic is an issue for those of us who live below the camp. The amount of traffic in the summer has been constant, making for dangerous conditions. We have almost been hit several times just trying to pull out of South Kidder Loop on South Kidder Creek Road. The fire safety and lives of the Kidder Creek campers, staff, and animals must be considered more carefully. We have been involved in fighting fire in California for more than 18 years. If a fire breaks out in this drainage, there will be no way to get all campers, staff, and animals out to safety. The staff report suggests that the camp would have 6 to 8 hours to evacuate, which seems unbelievable. We don't believe that the county wants to be responsible for a disaster of that magnitude, which is almost inevitable. We are not against the camp as a business in any way, but there must be a limit to this expansion. We respectfully request the adoption of Project Alternative Number 1 with a maximum of 400 persons to include staff. Sincerely, Donald and Vianne Hogan, Kidder Loop Road, Etna, California.
That was one of the letters that we received.
Say that again?
We received that letter.
Yes, and they asked it to be read into the
okay.
record.
Okay, I was making sure. Okay. All right. Making sure dot the I's here. opponents, we had opponents. Any other public comments, neither for nor against, but comments in general? Seeing none. Any
seeing
on the
none
phone?
Online.
Okay, thank you. All testimony has been given. Before I close the public hearing, one just left. Our technical individuals, specifically the water, is the one who just walked out. He'll be back though. Okay, Chris, do you have additions as quote-unquote staff information for what has been said thus far? updates, modifications to what you have shared earlier?
Yes, I can share. I guess the question is...
Is it yes or no?
Yes, I do.
Come to the mic then, please.
Chris Cummings, civil engineer and author of the wastewater feasibility report and the estimated evaporation water loss report. So what I understand is that there are some questions and concerns that the Board of Supervisors have, and what I understand is that their concern was more around the use of looking at rainfall on an annual basis rather than rainfall potentially in the irrigation time period or in just the summer time period. I didn't get that directly, that's just what I understand. And then we just heard some late comments that were submitted in the process from Ms. Gilmore that had questions or were concerned about the amount, well, several things. The rainfall data, 43.5 inches versus 20.4 inches, one cubic foot of water right versus the decree water right, 5.6% of evaporation loss for one cubic feet of water right versus 11 to 22%, and then yearly offsetting loss or zero loss with rainfall versus a minus 23. Okay, so if there's anything specific in what I just mentioned that you would like me to address, I'm happy to do that. But what I want to get across, or what's important, I think, from a relevance standpoint, is that when a professional prepares a report like this, which was specifically the estimated water loss, you have to use the best data available. You have to use the best professional judgment that you have and proceed forward in providing information that's requested by the client. And so in this case, the rainfall data was U.S. climate data, and the rainfall location, so what we're seeing in the question regarding the rainfall data is a difference in location of the data, so Fort Jones versus Etna, the duration of the data, the time span of the data, and so forth and so on. So if I look at...
Which did you use, or did you decide not to use Scott Valley Airport?
I used Etna data. There is a rain gauge up Kidder Creek in a higher elevation. So all of that can be considered. All of those aspects can be considered. But if we look at it irrespective of rainfall, the total loss, the calculation is a total loss of 36 inches. So if you close the pond, fill the pond up, close it off all year, you lose 36 inches. That's based on the PAN data that's available for evaporation. Now, with that given, it doesn't get afternoon sun as much as what we would expect the PAN data to use. I didn't use adjacent runoff areas where runoff can come into the pond. I just used the pond area. So there's a, I guess where it's going is we can see that the flows are variable. So if we look at monthly flows versus yearly flows, they're variable. The evaporation is variable. The water right volume by month is variable. So the design is not completed. So we're really at a planning level information here. So the report does specify where the data is from. It specifies how the calculations were done. We're not talking about a mathematical error. So in consideration of accepting the information in the report or commenting on it, that information is there to take into account, okay, is the rainfall a little high? potentially based on where the data was taken and so forth, is the from the comments, is that data somewhat low? You know, how conservative is the analysis? So when you take that all into consideration, in the end, from a recommendation from a technical perspective, is to address management of the camp's diverted water consumption of the 1 cubic feet per second. That varies during the the months, down from, to 0.8, down to 0.5.
Zero.
Yeah, to zero, exactly. So can, you know, it raises a number of questions. Can the pond be designed to reduce the amount of surface area that's exposed for evaporation? Can the camp have mitigating measures such as reducing areas of flood irrigation, reducing the duration of flood irrigation, going from sprinklers to from flood irrigation to sprinklers, as an example, all conservation effort, that the 1 cubic feet per second to 0.8 to 0.5 can be managed with along with the permitting process of the pond, because we don't have that information yet. So that's what would be proposed from a technical standpoint, because we have a continuation moving target here of comments that until we get to the design level, that's basically where it can be best addressed, because we have the actual conditions, how the camp is operating at that time, how many years out is the pond going to, you know, come into effect. So that's what I would recommend from a technical standpoint, because we can have continued input feedback. I can do different analysis, you know, based on only summer use, only irrigation season use, different rainfall data, and so forth. If we completely throw out the rainfall data, you know, should we be managing with that number? Probably not. The rainfall is pertinent. The irrigation is used to, the pond and the ditch is used to utilize irrigation in the winter for stock, as an example. So there's a conveyance loss that's dealt with, and then they get their share. So if you read the Scott Valley Decree on the water right, that's very complex.
That complex.
Yeah.
I deal with it.
For yourself, yeah, yeah.
It's pretty black and white, which comes down to two basic questions.
Sure.
Which I thought, and now are you one of or the engineer of the design of the pond and its location?
That hasn't been determined, because the design
was on the
design is in the future.
Okay, so
yeah, no, so
here's
the answer is
hold
no.
On. Yeah, here's the situation I have here. As Planning Commission, I fully understand and respect what you are saying. We are in we're in the planning phase. We as a planning commission look at, is it legal under California law, agency regs of the state level that apply to the project, county code, Scott Valley area plan, black and white, does it meet the legal test? Yes or no? Plain and simple. We don't get into the periphery opinions. We're charged with looking at things black and white. So here are the questions for the engineer, the design of the pond. On the map, and it was disclosed, I believe, Andy or Mr. Lloyd, one of you multiple months ago, said it was a flow through. But there's one set of data that actually shows a lower elevation of the pond for point of use. So question number one, is it flow through or is it fed by a point of use box?
The pond will be designed to be able to flow the Barker Ditch water through the pond, in and out of the pond.
Okay.
Now, definition of flow through for water right purposes
is very specific.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, you know more about that than I do regarding water law, but for engineering purposes,
what comes in
has to go out.
That's right.
At the elevation actually on the input must be higher than the output.
That's right.
They are not equal.
That's correct.
I did not see that on the map. Can that be added?
It could be added, sure.
Okay. So that's number one. You are here stating publicly it is a flow through pond.
Yes, and
it will be designed with an inflow at a higher elevation than the outflow.
That's the intent. That's
no,
correct.
No intent. It will be that way. If you want my support, it will be that way.
Yes, it will. Yeah.
Okay. Question number two. On your evapotranspiration, and this is an important question because we know that we have a varying inflow from Kidder Creek on the Barker Ditch, depending on available water at POD to end ditch. Have you run the numbers with your PAN data that confirm that pond will be or can be a certain percent full based upon 0.8, 0.4, or 0 CFS entering the system in June versus
okay.
July?
I asked this for
a couple different reasons. One is the pond actually going to be a pond in July in low water years? Because that water, as I understand the operation at KCOC, is also used for irrigation purposes on the property, which is fine. It's a pretty right. It's in the water right. But if water is being used from that on the designated parcels, some of which is above the pond, some is to the south of the pond, some is to the east and west of the pond. Not all of that is tailwater recovery coming back to the pond, so that adds on top of your evapotranspiration rates and available water for the pond. Have you done that calculation?
Okay, so if I need to understand the question a little more clearly. So your question centers around...
What I have seen is the amount of... What I've seen from you in the document, and I say you generally, okay, as one of the project people, you have a defined available amount of water, which in the plan says is going to the pond and does not, in the plan, break any of that water outside of pond use. But I know that water in that Barker Ditch is used in irrigation around KCOC, which decreases the available water for the pond.
Yeah. I would have to, I think this is better, this is kind of an operations, more of an operations question, but from a technical aspect for engineering of the pond design, when you talk about the level of the pond being at a different level in July, it's going to be based on the infeed level of the water coming in July, which is much reduced. And so minus whatever evaporation happens, which is a somewhat insignificant level for a month's time period, but the pond water level shouldn't vary significantly from month to month based on the flow rate necessarily, based on an outfeed gate.
Your outfeed's going to basically have... I'm part of a ditch, North Fork, version 17 French Creek. We have a flow-through pond on that system.
Yes.
The outflow to meet, actually, where my neighbor here used to live, is at the bottom. And so even when the inflow stops coming into the reservoir, there is still an outflow until it reaches a certain point because of the water right down ditch. And that's what I don't think you calculated into your evapotranspiration. Because the outflow is not on surface, it's at the bottom.
Yeah.
In order to meet California water law.
Yeah, I would agree the level of calculation, the detail of calculation does not get into that detail level. And yeah.
I want to see that.
Okay, very good. And then Tim Lloyd may be able to answer any more operations type questions as far as when the water gets low, you know, the level of the pond and the use of the pond. So the users typically end when school goes back into session, and then the pond isn't used. So it depends on the design of the pond and how that can be accommodated. But that design level engineering hasn't been done yet. So as far as coming up with an elevation in the pond or volume of water that would be remaining after the water's cut off. So if you cut off the inflow, this is a lined pond. Theoretically, it would depend on the depth of the channel on the outflow, and then the pond would lower to that depth as it goes out. So yeah, that's a volume of water. Is that a significant volume of water? Potentially, it's a number of acre feet of water, but nothing small compared to the total flow for the irrigation season.
Yeah. Any other questions for Mr. Cummings?
No, sir.
Okay, because it's critical whether it is flow through or whether it is taken at a point of use down to the pond and Barker Ditch, to which case water rights downstream, irrigation rights for KCOC are being met, and then what water is dedicated to the pond.
Tim can elaborate on that, which may be helpful.
Oh boy, we're already at 1:25, aren't we?
Aren't you supposed to be somewhere by 25 minutes ago?
Well, I can go at least another 20 minutes. We're not gonna resolve this, but I wanna get the comment before, because staff's got a little bit of work to do, in my opinion, here on this. Mr. Lloyd, go ahead. Please, if you can address the pond issue.
Well, if I could better answer that for you.
Because I'm sure you have a Barker Ditch agreement.
I'm sorry?
Oh, you have a Barker Ditch agreement, right? That's what I'm getting at as to how that connects to the evaporation transpiration. Mr. Cummings said 36 inches, based upon the design depth of the pond, ensuring inflow to outflow, water rights down ditch or net.
That's right. When you start getting low flows like that on the Barker Ditch, they're not getting water downstream. There is a period of time when that water, and you know this about the ditch, it gradually dries up. So how much water is actually going to run out of the pond can be calculated, but I don't think you're talking about a very big volume of water because the input is about the same as the output. This pond is not doing away with the Barker Ditch. It's right next to it. And so a portion of the water from the Barker Ditch will run into the pond, and all the excess will run back into the Barker Ditch. So whatever water runs in when the pond is full is going to run back out again. Yes, there's going to be an elevation difference, but how much difference depends on the volume of water that is allowed to run through the pond. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay, so before you continue, within the Barker Ditch agreement between the water right holders, that is in the agreement on the flow through, elevation to elevation. There is no higher priority down ditch from KCOC. You're all equal.
KCOC has the highest priority on the ditch.
Okay.
I'm not sure how to further answer your question in that what's going to happen when that balances out. If you understand the Barker Ditch, it never dries up. Kidder Creek never dries up. At the diversion, there's always water, and there's always been water in the Kidder Creek Pond. There is a point at which we stop taking water out because the flows get so low that we quit irrigating. And that period of time is usually toward the end of August, maybe into September, when we will stop irrigating completely because there's so little flow.
Now, is the irrigation taking place at KCOC, water from Barker?
Yes.
And you pump it where it needs to be pumped?
Yes, part of it's pumped,
the
part of
it's
flood irrigated.
Okay. So you pump out of the existing pond out?
That's correct.
Okay. And I'm not trying to beat the horse here, but it's crucial to be clear whether Barker Ditch has an outlet to the pond or whether Barker Ditch flows into the pond, through the pond, and out.
And
the reason that's important is because of the curtailment regulation.
Because 100% does not go in the pond?
That's what I'm trying to get clear here, because
that's
under
correct.
The curtailment, you can divert from your POD at Kidder Creek itself to the pond, but that water cannot go past the pond.
That is correct. Under the current curtailment for last summer,
what
does it look like
with
going forward? Nobody really knows.
Well, it's what we have.
But that is what happened last summer. That's
okay.
Correct.
All right. And approximately how many acre feet are you pumping to irrigate on an annual basis?
That's a great question. Because I don't know that we've ever figured that out. We use our water right. And as Chris explained, and you know this, once you get under 16 CFS, I think it's under 10, it starts dropping down the percentage because of the way it's divided up.
So you haven't calculated your annual water use in acre feet,
no.
CFS, gallons per minute?
Mm-hmm.
You need to do that.
How much we are guessing
you
that we're using?
Oh, there's no
well,
guessing.
Because the problem, it comes down to what water's available. Because some
what
years
do
you have
put,
more
what water. Do you put on your
and
annual?
We have a gauge, and there's
what
a gauge.
What do you put on your annual water use form?
Annual water use form is for all of the ditch.
Mm-mm.
Yes, it is. And it's not divided out. I mean, I just did it last week.
Oh, okay.
Jenner.
So Barker is a company then?
The
your
Barker
association?
Ditch is overseen by Jim Cattle Company. They have the permit on it, and they submit all the reports on it.
Okay, but you have not individually calculated water use on KCOC property.
Not separate.
You need to do that. Okay.
So you use the pumps?
Yeah, you go pounds pressure, hours run per day, nozzle size.
And you're going to somehow calculate the flood irrigation area?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm pumping. Yeah.
I've got it.
Well, you're not pumping the flood irrigation part, so.
We do.
We don't.
Yeah. Okay. You've answered that line of questioning. So we have some questions there. All right. Thank you. Mr. Pearson, did you have any additional that you wanted to add before we close up comments?
Glenn Pearson, 20840 Live Oak Road, Red Bluff, California. Just a real quick, Ann Marsh mentioned about this well, and she quoted I think it's a California drinking water number. To the best of my knowledge, that's the camp well, and that was probably a key piece of information that we had on geologic information when I put my report together, as water level information. And it was one of the few wells that we had that I could go to the ground and I say, that's exactly where that well is. So, where it's not mentioned in the report by the drinking water number, by the number that I use, that's what it is.
Thank you. Any further public comment?
Can I ask a question?
I will be happy to entertain a question.
Okay. I'm sorry to get more again. Is it possible for the commission to ask for an actual draft schematics of the pond? I'm still unclear based on what Mr. Cummins said, what Mr. Lloyd said, as to the elevation differences. I think I heard Mr. Cummings say it was a pass-through and there's no elevation change, but I'm still unclear, and that's kind of a critical aspect. So.
You and me both. Okay. All right. Further comments or questions?
Seeing none online.
Okay. Mr. Parker, you've been silent, but I guarantee you, you're going to be getting a call from me in the next 3 weeks and 6 days. I will go ahead at this time then and close public comment. Close public hearing. And commissioners, it is, I'm going to state this very clearly, it is not because of the time, because I honestly don't think if I didn't have a place to be here in a while, we would not answer the questions that I have before 5 o'clock. I personally would like to continue this until our next meeting, but I would request that at the earliest possible convenience that our clerk send, even though they will be unapproved minutes from this meeting, particularly the public comment and staff report from OES that we had to Commissioner Hart, so that he is up to speed at next month. Because I think based upon the comment letters that we've received, comments we've heard, staff, legal, and OES, I'll bet dollars to donuts Commissioner Hart's got questions now also.
Will he be here, do you think?
He will be here in February. He assured me.
I did not send him any of the comments because he wasn't going to be here today.
He owes me
after
this one.
Me too.
Okay. So, commissioners, is that okay with you?
Yes.
So I would
have a question, though.
Go ahead.
You, sir, you said that nobody from the Board of Supervisors notified you. Did I misunderstand about...
I haven't had direct questions from the Board of Supervisors to answer, and I haven't received them myself, and I haven't answered any.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Counselor, process question. In an effort to perhaps decrease the amount of time at our next meeting, is it appropriate and proper for the commissioners, the three of us, plus Commissioner Hart, should he so choose, to direct specific questions that we have, whether it be to Mr. Peterson or Mr. Cummins, to KCOC, to you, via email to be answered, addressed for responses at our next February meeting? Would that be appropriate?
I think that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
More efficient.
Because I think over the next 72 hours, I'd like to spend a couple nights on the left.
As long as we get all the communications.
Yes. And so that's the process part. If I send it to our clerk, she would then make sure that all the other commissioners see the questions I submitted. I just want to make sure we are not doing a potential Brown violation.
Yeah, I don't want to
create
a daisy chain type meeting where...
Or would we be better off simply submitting to the clerk our questions, and then clerk and staff will say, oh, these are the same question, they're all going here.
That would be a better practice.
Okay.
But we will still end up with them by going through staff, is that correct?
Correct.
Thank
we
you.
Direct the questions to the clerk,
okay.
Boom. So we're clear on that?
Yep.
Okay. So I would entertain a motion then to continue this to February.
So moved, sir.
A second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. So this will be continued to the February Planning Commission meeting.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Do you have a deadline by which you want me to get these minutes to Commissioner Hart?
My motion was as soon as humanly possible without placing you under undue stress and strain.
Okay.
I'm a compassionate person unless I'm on the basketball.
So next week probably.
That's
okay. By the end of next week.
Blair won't be back probably until Monday or Tuesday next week anyway,
well,
so that's
be
fine.
Maybe by the end of next week, so about 10 days.
Okay.
I might have to take them home, but I will.
For those who came, I appreciate it. Thank you much. But we are going to take the time it takes to do it right.
So. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The next
on the agenda. Future meeting, February 15th. Correspondence outside of projects, any?
No.
Staff comments, any?
No.
Even you, Mr. Dean, nothing, Miss?
I have a comment.
Oh. I'm with Mr. Dean.
All right. You asked a question last month about whether the dam removal or whether it was a reclamation plan.
Yes.
If you recall. And I looked into it, and FERC does have a decommissioning plan, a chapter on it, is post-dam removal remediation, which includes just briefly revegetating, taking away sediment as appropriate, reestablishing some of the recreational areas. I have it here. I don't know if you would like my copy of it.
I would like to see a copy of that. Yeah. And I guess my same question I had last time, does the county, whether it be through us, through Mr. Dean, through Haley, administratively, have any authority to modify that reclamation plan, specifically because I have seen in projects we had where Commissioner Hart and I have line-itemed out proposed vegetation to be used because they are deemed noxious weeds.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Can we ask the members of the audience to either leave or be quiet because I'm still taking minutes?
Does the county have that avenue? Or is FERC going to play big brother, go to hell county, we're doing as we please?
Well, it's already part of the FERC-approved decommissioning plan, so I cannot imagine how it would come down.
Okay, so it's basically they're going to throw seeds out on the landscape and give our ag commissioner more headaches.
Something.
Okay.
I mentioned that Governor Newsom, after he cut the ribbon to remove the dams, a week later went to a news program and said, California needs more storage.
Yeah. And we need more electricity.
Let's not
have a comment,
that
sir. You in the blue shirt. Did you have a comment? Oh, I thought I'd seen your hand up.
All right. Thank you. So that was our staff comment, Mr. Carroll. Yes. Thank you. And yes, I would like to see a copy of that email.
Okay.
Thank
I'll
you.
Actually email you the link.
Okay, that's fine. Thanks. Commissioner comments?
No, sir.
Thank you all. We stand adjourned.